allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. For public communications, due to the impractical nature of having public participation during the current COVID-19 global pandemic, the Madison Plains Local School District Board of Education is suspending our public participation policy during this health crisis. Please know the members of the school district community who have questions, comments, or concerns may still direct those to the appropriate staff members, then the appropriate administrators and board members. All contact information is available on the district's website. Moving on to board work session. I do not have anything. Does anybody have anything?
No.
Okay. We will move to the approval of board minutes, please.
Madam President, I make a motion that the minutes of the July 21st, 2020 meeting be approved as written.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Sumner?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Ms. Reinfeldt?
Yes.
Mrs. Anikus?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Okay, we do not have any student recognition or employee recognition. No department reports and no superintendent committee reports, correct?
Correct.
And we will move to the treasurer's report. Mr. Mustang?
Thank you, Mrs. Anikus. The first item I have are the July 2020 financial statements for you. I will pull up a couple here. This is our reconciled bank statement. As you can see, our total fund balances, which would include all funds of the district, we ended July with $4,450,650.83. So this has been our best July start to a school year in the last, it's 2017, I believe. I wanted to point that out. On our spending plan, we have a newly created spending plan. And you can see we were $422,000 above expectations on our revenue and $105,000 below our expectations on expenditures. Now, just as a reminder, our spending plan, how it's created, is it looks at the percentage of our total budgeted revenues and total budgeted expenditures that came out based on the percentages that actually came out the year before. So if we saw 17% of our revenue in one area coming in July last year, we apply that 17% to our total expected revenue this year and then expect that amount to come in. So that's how the spending plan, when we're looking month by month, a year in advance, how I create that. And it all comes over here. Right now we have our current five-year forcast, which is the May 2020 forecast numbers in there. So that's actually 2 years out. So our 2021 amounts on the May 2025 year forecast that's plugged in there. And for the most part, our budgeted amounts align with those forecast amounts with a few exceptions. But our revenue, as you can see, is there's about a $4,000 difference there between what we have actually in our budget and what we forecasted back in May. And our expenditures, we have some additional expenditures there. The biggest one is due to our health insurance rates, that we saw that a little bit of additional amount based on the figuring of health insurance rates. But I think I talked about that a while ago. But that's the biggest difference was in that. So we had expected in the forecast to end with $1.7 million. Right now, based on our budgeted figures, we looked at end the year with $2.4 million, but we could be ending the year closer to $2.9 million, depending on how the year goes. So that's just a quick kind of little refresher on the forecast. You can see over here on the right, we're $500,000 ahead of schedule, I guess, right now. It doesn't mean that that's going to hold true and bear out the entire way, but it's difficult when we're trying to forecast month by month, a year in advance. So this is this gets adjusted throughout the year as we see things actually come in. So I just kind of want to go through that just a little bit more than what I normally do. What is encouraging is our 2 months that we're always worried about here in December and January, where we have to consider a tax anticipation note. Right now it's looking like with the $1 million tax anticipation note, we would have over $2 million. So what that tells me is we may not need the tax anticipation
right.
note.
That
we
Good.
Could have $1 million at the bank at that time.
Yep.
So we'll have to see how it plays out. But that's why we look at those things in advance so we can see those needs well in advance and prepare for it. Okay. Moving on here. So our revenue history, and I'll go down here. It's always a challenge to try and get it to show up big enough for everybody to see it here. We're 18% ahead on our revenue. The yellow here is where we're at. I'm sorry, I can't get it to zoom in here for some reason. There. So we're 18% ahead on our revenue. We've collected $2.4 million right now. So 18% ahead based on where we were this time last year is what that is. So all of those are previous Julys going back to 2012. Our expenditures, this is in total, but at this same point in time in July, we are 5% below expenditures. So you see we're at $1,124,000. Last year at this time we were $1,179,000, so a little below, which is great. So continuing the trend of being conservative in our estimates and our spending. With our cash flow, you see here, this is the general fund. So our general fund ended July with $3,957,081. If you look up here, you can see the last time that we had an amount exceed that was in July of 2017. So our estimates again have us at $2.9 million to end the year. Our black line here is our estimate throughout the year, and that would include budgeted amounts for a tax anticipation note, but again, we may not need that. So that is the spending plan that's been updated for 2021. It's our first one of the year, so hopefully we continue to monitor that and adjust as needed. The next item that I have is the funding update. And for this funding update, I'm looking at our costs here for our COVID-19 costs, and I'm going to explain to you how we afforded those costs in the various funds that we have available. So you see here we have our first item is Chromebooks. We have 600 Chromebooks at $305 a piece. That comes to a total of $183,000. The next item we have is additional PPE, which would include sprayers, equipment, cleaning supplies, the dividers that Mr. Garrett and his department made, things of that nature, gloves, masks, all of those things combined. We have $35,000. Hotspots, what those are the portable Wi-Fi units that we're looking to purchase to provide internet to student homes who may not have internet. We have 300 units projected to be ordered at $60 a piece for a total of $18,000. The service for those hotspots, we need 10 months of service. However, the Broadband Ohio grant, which I'll get into a little bit more, will only pay for up to 4 months of service or through December 30th of 2020. So that's why that's separated out. We have 4 months of service there that totals $19,800. Mm. And then we also have the ability under that same Broadband Ohio grant to apply for an expansion of our public Wi-Fi access in our public spaces. So that would be, you know, any public access space on campus, we could expand Wi-Fi coverage to those areas so that students can take advantage of that if they need to be here on campus in their cars, for instance, learning out and accessing material. The $212,000 listed is nowhere near what we're going to be applying for. That's just the remainder of what's available to apply for. There's a $250,000 limit that schools can apply for. So based on our hotspot need, that's what's remaining to apply for the Wi-Fi coverage. That application is due by the end of the week, so we have our instructional technology supervisor looking into that. Pierce is looking into that for us, and so we should have that application filed by the end of the week. The additional hotspot service for the remaining 6 months, if we wanted to continue that service past December 30th, totals $29,700. And then the biggest expense is the Florida Virtual Schools, which is our online learning component curriculum that's been purchased. That's approximately 1,100 students at around $175 a piece. It's an estimate there of $193,000. It could be around $196,000, depending on the total number of students. Right now, I think our actual numbers are around 1,124 students. So a little bit more than the 1,100 listed. So then those are the costs that total up to $690,700. How do we pay for those amounts? Those are the amounts to the right, the columns to the right. And so we're going to continue to look. The total cost columns are going to remain frozen, and I'm going to cycle through those different columns to the right so you see where the money's coming from. And there's a lot. That's why I had to do it this way. So for instance, the Chromebooks. The first amount of money we're using towards the Chromebooks are the Fund 510 Coronavirus Relief Funds. That's additional CARES Act funding, so that's $68,567. Keep your eye here on the top row. The next amount that we'd be using would be the High Schools That Work funds that we have available. The state's allowed us flexibility to purchase Chromebooks with those funds this year, so there's $7,500. We have some remaining from prior fiscal years making middle grade work money that we've been okay to spend towards this. We have $4,283 from fiscal year 16, and I really wish that would be what I wanted to do here. Okay, let's see if that worked better. Okay, and then we have $1,816 from fiscal year 17. Then we look at our student fee money that we have, where we collect our student fees each year, and those are used to offset general fund costs. We have monies there that we can put towards the Chromebooks. We have $3,801 in one of the high school fee accounts. We have $7,500 in one of the junior high fee accounts, $18,500 in the elementary, $9,500 in the intermediate, $11,500 in the other high school fee account. We also have the principal support funds or building support funds. At the elementary level, we have $12,000 available there, and at the high school level, we have $1,000. Then we have curriculum resources. Mrs. Grigsby has allocated funds in her curriculum resources budget towards the purchase of Chromebooks. Totaling $28,518. I appreciate her working with us on that. And then we came in under budget in a couple accounts. So the special ed consortium, we have two students that Mrs. LaValle was able to move to remote learning out of the consortium for this time, which should save us for the first semester $22,500. $2,013 of that we'll put towards Chromebooks, leaving $6,500 to come out of PI for a remainder of zero. So that's how we pay for $183,000 of Chromebooks without having to increase our appropriations. So, and when I get to the appropriations, you'll see that. So if we go back up to the top, and I won't go through this for each item, but we've done the same thing for each of these items. So the additional PPE, try to go through a little quicker. We have our school safety grant money that we received from the Attorney General last year, $5,262. $5,000 from our GNX solar donation that we received this year. And then our tuition reimbursement, that we have to budget $50,000 each year for tuition reimbursement for the contract. But if they don't take advantage of that full amount, then we can reallocate the remaining funds. So we had $33,000 of underutilized tuition reimbursement that we were able to put towards other areas. So we've got $24,737 going offset that additional PPD. And that takes care of that. The hotspots you see here is covered. That's going to be what we're applying for this week with the Broadband Ohio. So all of those costs for the hotspots and the 4 months of hotspot service, plus the public Wi-Fi access, will be applied for from the Broadband Ohio grant. We don't know how much will be awarded of that, but we stand a really good chance to being awarded a substantial amount. So. The additional hotspot service for the 6 months, we've got $950 out of Title IV grant that we have. We have $8,263 of that tuition reimbursement that we saved that we can put towards that. And then $20,487 for those students that were moved out of the consortium and into remote learning. So that covers the hotspot additional service if we choose to do that. And then the Florida Virtual is mainly our first round of CARES Act funding. The ESSER funds have $159,000 there. And then the remaining amount comes from Title IV monies, $6,100, that's a grant. And then $23,000 out of Title I grant monies. And $4,198 out of it's an expanding opportunities for each child grant that is new for this year that we'll be able to use. Along with $458 from curriculum resources, it's already been budgeted for, so that covers those costs. So a lot of different pots of money to try and come and meet these additional needs without having to go and tap the general fund for additional resources and additional budgets, budgeted amounts. So there's a lot to go through there, but it took a lot of moving pieces around trying to put that puzzle together. But I think we have it covered. Be able to, once you approve these appropriations, to create those purchase orders to get these things ordered. You guys have any questions on that? Okay. And then the permanent appropriations is the last item that I have. I've summarized them there for you. I'm happy to report that actually I have a $95,000 decrease to our general fund that I adjusted, and that's due to our additional student wellness and success fund dollars that we received. What we did with those funds was to pay for an additional amount for our school nurse contract that we weren't able to pay for last year, as well as to pay for some our guidance counselor costs at the high school. So that amounted to quite a bit of money that we were able to then reduce the budgeted amounts in the general fund. Because now those money that's coming out of the 467 student wellness and success funds. That's only guaranteed from that was only for last year and for this year, so there's no guarantee those costs could come back to the general fund next year. Just so you know that. The PI fund remains unchanged at $350,000, as well as the food service is unchanged. The 09 fund, that's that student fees fund that we talked about earlier. We just had to add a little bit of monies there to the already budgeted amounts to be able to cover those print book costs, so $1,198. And then we had to make some adjustments to the 018 fund based on their available cash balances. So they already had funds available. I just wanted to make sure we stayed within our available cash balance there, not knowing what funds are going to be coming into those funds this year. So that was a small decrease of $158. And then the 019 fund, we had funds that were budgeted for this year that was a carryover encumbrance that was actually spent before the year closed last year. So the biggest one of those being those No Child Hungry funds that Sherry Allen received to feed the students. So that was over $5,000 that we had budgeted that we were able to reduce because those funds have already been spent. And then the remainder are largely our grant allocations that we received in the CCIP, our federal grants that were allocated that weren't available when we put forth our initial budget. So you have the 461 fund, which is a state grant. And then you have the 467 fund, which actually flows through our foundation. Those are the actual student wellness and success funds. So you see there we have $219,000 in student wellness and success funds. The Coronavirus Relief Fund and the CARES Act ESSER funds there, the 507 and 510, that's the $159,000 and the $68,000. And then you have our 516, 572, 587, and 599. Those are our annual grant amounts that we receive roughly every year. So those funds are now in the appropriations. So all in all, for a revision, adding $650,000 of additional cost to support remote learning and decreasing the general fund appropriations is a pretty good appropriation to be able to put forward there, I feel like. So it doesn't mean that as things change, I won't come back if we need to revisit it. But I'm hopeful that we can stay as we have in the past within our budget.
How quick do they turn around those decisions on the grants, what they'll give us?
So the Broadband Ohio grant, that I'm not sure how much, because what we can do is we'll apply, and we won't necessarily expend those funds, but we'll apply, and then once the funds are awarded, then if we need to spend it out of other funds and then reimburse those funds until the actual funds come in, we could do that. But I think we'll get a fairly quick decision to where we won't have to use general fund monies. We'll be able to allocate those funds and then process the reimbursement request through a project cash request to get those funds back in. But there's $250,000 available to over 600 school districts. If everybody exceeds that, then what will happen is it will be prorated then at that point. So basically, if every school district applies for $250,000 and it gets prorated because it will exceed the $50 million available, every district would receive $83,000. So I think we stand a pretty good chance to get a pretty good amount of money based on the fact that we're not going to be asking for the full amount, and I don't see every school district in Ohio asking for $250,000.
It's kind of designated for rural more, right? Like, does it say that?
I think every district's going to try to utilize it in some way. And I think
all rural
school districts, the reason they put a cap is to keep the large school districts from exhausting the fund.
Okay.
Because they could tap $250,000 a lot quicker.
Sure.
So it's nice that they put that cap that allows for smaller districts like ours to still receive a substantial benefit.
Good.
Okay.
Fingers crossed.
All right. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, that was good.
Madam President, I make a motion that upon recommendation of the Treasurer, the Board approve financial items I-5, and I believe that should be I-6, instead of H-6 on the agenda.
Yes.
So if you could just make that correction.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Ms. Reinfeld?
Yes.
Mr. Stonerock?
Yes.
Mrs. Enikas?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Okay, moving to superintendent's report. Mr.
Eichel. Madam President, before I go ahead and get started, do we have any more batteries by chance? Because mine is apparently.
I think that's what's going on with mine. It shut off.
Won't
turn back on.
Thank you, Mr. Mustang. I appreciate it. My battery had run out of juice, and no one was going to be able to hear me without it. So, Madam President and members of the board, a few items this evening regarding our plans for our restart. I have before you this evening an updated and revised calendar I had sent a message to the community last week indicating to them that we would like to do this. We just have the confluence of a few different items with a very different school year before us that is that brings us to the point in time where we are asking for an updated calendar. The plan is to have students begin on Monday, August 31st. Our teachers are in in-service trainings this week. They are getting training with regard to online learning and the new Florida Virtual School platform that we have. In the event that we would have to go out and go either on blended or fully remote learning, we felt like this platform was important for us because it would offer a more robust experience for our students. They will have more continuity than they would have had on the other platform that we had. And it just it will be a better, more interactive experience for them as well. And because of that, we felt like learning would increase. And so when we had explored this opportunity earlier in the summer, it was not available at that point in time. And then late in the summer, there was a development that occurred, and we were able to become a part of this, and we felt like it was a worthwhile thing. We feel like it will be good for our students, and that was the driving factor in it, what is best for them, for our students. So our teachers are busy training with that right now. They are also going to be spending time aligning the content that is there to our curriculum, so that as we move through the year, if there is a point in time where we have to move to one of those other models, and I will say I think there is a possibility that could occur. Our teachers then will be able to transition students to that, so that while they are out, they will be able to continue to move through content, which is something that is important. We also had polled our parents and our guardians about how many of them would want to be involved in virtual learning from the get-go. We had 200, as of last count that I'm aware of, we had 237 students take advantage of this. So a little more than 20% of our student population. And as a result of that, and then as the result of some lately received resignations as well, we have some movement occurring internally with our staff and trying to move some around to be able to put them in a position to be able to teach the virtual classes and to be able to work with those students and monitor them and interact with them and understand how this platform works, but then also replacing some of the people who have left. And so there's a person on the agenda for you this evening to hire a new teacher as a result of a resignation that we had. And there is some other movement that is happening as well. So there's just an awful lot happening in anticipation of this year that, like I said, is going to be very, very different. I do think that what is happening here with the pandemic has influenced, I think, some people's decisions. And as we got closer to the start of the school year, the reality of it as it was getting close was like, yeah, I think it just made people realize and had, as one person put it to me, a moment of clarity, and some decisions were made. So, and because of the fact that parents will have the opportunity then to choose again, parents and guardians will have the opportunity to choose again in early December, we are going to extend winter break and provide in-service training in case we need to move staff around again in January. And so we'll delay the start of second semester. The only other changes with that, because we were shortening then, we were moving back to the start of the school year, we did move back the end of the first grading period 1 week to balance the first grading period and the second grading period a little bit. And then at the end of that first grading period, there was a fall break there. And so we moved that fall break back 1 week to correspond with the end of the new end of the first grading period. So that is it with regard to the calendar. So that is before you this evening. I intend in the coming days to share some information with our parents and our guardians and also with our staff. I have two documents from Madison County Public Health. And I do believe it is fairly well known at this point in time that we are obligated to abide by the recommendations and the guidelines that they provide to us. And I will say they have been a good partner. I have heard some stories about some interactions with other health departments around the state and school districts that have not been good. And I know by moments some of the guidance that we have been given from our county health department has been difficult in some regards to accept, because our heart, we want to keep kids safe, but we want to make sure that we can continue to educate and provide all the traditional experiences that our students have. Unfortunately, we are in a pandemic, and the job of the health department is to try to put things in place that keep us as safe as possible. And so there has been some difficulty. There has been some news that we've received that we have not maybe particularly cared for quite as much, but we understand the heart that it is coming with. But I want to make sure that we are as clear as we can be with our parents and our guardians, our students and our staff about what the expectations are. And so there are some documents that I intend to send to our community. One is a COVID-19 protective actions and focus areas document, and that provides us with some general information about how we need to operate. One piece of that, and the governor has came out, I believe, late last week or maybe the week before, but our health department was already there before, but all of our students have to wear masks while they are at school. All of our staff have to wear masks while they are at school. There are some exceptions to that, some of which are, you know, have required medical documentation that need to be provided along with it. And in those cases where there's a medical reason or there are a few instructional allowances that we have been permitted, and specifically like with K-3, the teaching of phonics, because it is important for young students to be able to see their teacher and how they are forming words and sounds, there has been an allowance made as an example for teachers who are teaching phonics at that grade level to be able to wear a shield, a clear face shield instead. And so in any event, when somebody is not wearing a cloth face mask, they need to be wearing a face shield. And so that is something that is important. And I know this is a point of contention for people around the state and around the nation. It is not just here in our community, but there are people who are not happy about the fact that children and staff members have to wear face masks, and I understand that. But we are obligated to abide by the guidelines that we have been given, and part of that guidance is that if a student is not going to wear a face mask, then they are not going to be permitted to attend school. And so I think that is important for people to realize. There are a number of other things that are important for people to realize. We are attempting to bring everybody back 5 days a week, K through 12. We are attempting to do that. We are attempting to do that because we know that educationally, the best thing for our students is to have them here and to be giving them as close to the real experience or as close to the traditional experience as that they can get. And so we believe that is important. As a district, we have made a decision that is the direction that we are going to go. Unfortunately, and we have taken steps to try to provide for people's safety as well, there are going to be some places where maybe not everybody's going to be able to maintain that 3 to 6 feet of social distancing that the CDC recommends. We have, our custodial and maintenance department have built desk shields to be able to put a barrier up, and that's part of the guidance from the Madison County Public Health Department. They have built barriers, plastic barriers, to be able to help prevent germs from flowing, to be able to keep people safe. So we have done, and obviously Mr. Mustine referred to the PPE and the aerostatic sprayers that we are purchasing to try to make sure that Madison Plains is as healthy of an environment, as safe of an environment as we can make it be for our students. The reality of it is, though, and this is part of what is difficult, and it is what it is, but if a student in a classroom tests positive, the guidance is that anyone who has been within 6 feet of that student for a cumulative amount of 15 minutes or more, based upon the CDC guidelines, those students or teachers or whoever who have been within 6 feet of that student for 15 minutes, they are going to have to quarantine for 14 days. No matter what, they are going to have to quarantine. And that is going to make things difficult. The other piece is that if a student comes to school and happens, if they have one sign of COVID-19, one symptom, so you come to school and you have a scratchy throat. If you tell somebody that you've got a scratchy throat, or if you cough, if there's a concern, you're going to be sent to a room that is specifically designated for students who have COVID symptoms. Somebody is going to come and talk to you, probably the school nurse is going to make an assessment, and then you are probably going to have to go home. And you may have to be there in isolation at your home for 10 days. This is not going to be pleasant. We know that this is going to be very, very difficult. But it is the reality of what it is. All of the schools in Madison County will abide by these regulations. And I do believe that many of the school districts around the state are abiding by the same guidelines. It is, in many instances, for some of the guidance that we've been given, it is what the CDC is recommending, and what the Ohio Department of Health is recommending. And so this is not going to be particularly easy, but we're going to do the very best that we can with it. And like I said, we have done what we can to try to make this place as safe as possible. We do have a maintenance director who is, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but is a little bit of a germaphobe. And some of us have joked that Madison Plains Local School District might be the safest place in the county because of him. So we will see. And if we have cases that develop, it certainly will not be the fault of our maintenance supervisor. He has done a fantastic job, and I'm very, very pleased. But as the governor has said, to the degree that you have community spread in your community, the governor has said you're going to have community spread in the school, or in the schools as well. And right now, unfortunately, in Madison County, there is a fair amount of community spread. And I know that a large portion of that is due to a couple of isolated incidents with a couple of organizations in our community. But even beyond that, though, there is still, on a percentage basis, from what I'm told, a lot of community spread. And so that is something that we have to bear in mind as we head into this. I will say, too, and this is something that I think is important for our community, to hear, I was given an update on the availability of substitute teachers late last week, and I will just say that the number of substitute teachers that I was given is incredibly short. It is a very small list. Part of that is due to the fact that I'm sure that people are concerned about coming into the schools, and I know that we're not the only district that is facing this. I know other districts are too, but part of my concern is that we are going to we're going to have a shortage of teachers, which could impact us severely as things get going. So, and the governor has said as well that. The health experts are telling him that November, December, and January, when flu season gets rolling, could make things pretty difficult. So we are up against a tall challenge here. We are working very, very hard to do the very best that we can for our students and for our community. and our staff as well. But I wanted to take the opportunity to share some information with our community so that they have an idea of what it is that we are facing as an organization from a health standpoint. I know it's not cheery news. I wish that it was, but we're in a pandemic, and so we are doing the very best that we can. Also, in addition, and so what I wanted to say to the to our parents and our guardians, if there are community members who, for whatever reason, if they are out of work or underemployed or something like that, if they are interested in being a substitute teacher, the only qualifications to be a substitute teacher are that you have a four-year degree and can pass the BCI and the FBI background checks. If we have parents in the community who are interested in that, I would ask that they can reach out to me and I can point them in the right direction. Ultimately, they will have to get in touch with the Madison-Champaign Educational Service Center, our ESC, and they can sign up to be a substitute teacher. And again, the requirements are a four-year degree and be able to pass the required background checks. If there are people who are interested in doing that, we would love to have them. The other place that we are short is bus drivers. We have just enough right now to be able to cover the routes that we have. And so in becoming a bus driver is more difficult than becoming a substitute teacher, because obviously you're going to be driving a large motor vehicle with, 50 children on it. As you know, that is a difficult task. And so the training for that is much more involved. But if there are community members who are interested in being a substitute bus driver, which may at some point in time then turn into being a full-time bus driver or a regular bus driver for us, a fully employed bus driver, there are opportunities there. I would encourage those community members to reach out to our transportation supervisor, Ms. Kim Rogers. She would be happy to be able to talk to community members about doing that. But that is another spot where if we have some drivers who become sick, at this point in time, there is a possibility that we would not be too far from having to shut routes down. And at that point in time, the way to get kids to school is to have the parents drive them. So it's a challenge for us. So. But we are doing the very best that we can to rise above and do the best we can for our kids. Also, there is some board policy that says that if I make a significant purchase, I do need to let the board know at the next regularly scheduled meeting. It says that I'm to notify, in those situations, I'm to notify the board president immediately and then let the board know at the next board meeting. So I am here to do that tonight. Mrs. Zanikas and I did have some conversation. We did obviously make the purchase for Florida Virtual, and then we are purchasing 300 MiFi hotspots for students who do not have internet access at their homes. That is something that is important to us, and it is a way that we are working to try to make this, if we do have to go remote or we have to go blended, try to make this experience for our students better than it was in the spring. In addition to those 300 MiFis, we are purchasing, we have ordered 40 some Chromebooks already. We had in a survey that we got, we had 40 to 50 people who told us they needed a computer. So there had been an order placed earlier in the summer for 40 Chromebooks. We'll be able to make up the balance out of what we have here. But then we decided as we talked about this further, we thought that that might not be enough, and really we wanted to go a little bit further, and so we have, as a district, we have purchased, and there were, with the survey that we had, it showed that there were really more kids than that who really needed them or could benefit from them. So we have, as a district, made a decision that we are going to purchase 600 Chromebooks for our students. The idea behind that is that ultimately what we would like to try to be able to do, as a lot of other districts have done, and as would be good for our students, is to try to begin to transition to a one-to-one school district where we have one device mm-hmm. per one student. We believe that that will be beneficial for us from a learning standpoint. Our students will be able to have a different curricular and learning experience as a result with those Chromebooks. And so we have made the decision that we have purchased those. They obviously come, as the MiFis do, at a significant price. And so the numbers that Mr. Mustine had showed you earlier this evening are the cost of those devices. But we believe if there is a blessing to come out of this, the fact that we may be able to move in the direction of being one-to-one as a district, we believe will be very, very good for us and for student learning. That is a decision that we have made, and so we have spent that money. The unfortunate piece is that lots of school districts across the nation have made the decision to purchase Chromebooks. And unfortunately, there is a backlog on those right now. I know one company in particular that manufactures them. Unfortunately, a large shipment of Chromebooks was turned around and sent back to where they were manufactured. We have ordered from a different company, obviously. But these are all things that are making the purchasing and acquisition of these devices difficult. But those Chromebooks that we have ordered, we estimate they will be here probably the middle part of the second grading period. We are hopeful for that, and whenever they do get here, it will be a blessing. So that is really my superintendent's report for the evening. And I know it was not terribly cheerful, but it's the reality that we have.
Thank you. We'll move on to policy and governance then.
And so, Madam President and members of the board, there are some items before you this evening for your consideration. There are a couple of policies related to the Ohio Teacher Evaluation System. There is a new teacher evaluation system that is being put in place. Some school districts have opted to implement it this year. The state gave districts the opportunity with the COVID crisis to implement next year, but you still have to adopt the policy prior to September 1st. And so, though we are implementing OTES 2.0 next year, the policies are before you this evening for your approval. There is also a face mask policy that is before you as well. I also shared with you the administrative guidelines for that policy, so you have had an opportunity to see those as well. But that policy is before you this evening. As another regular item of business, we are required to adopt the bus stop list, or you're required to approve the bus stop list, and that is a fluid document. It can change, but it is required to be adopted at the beginning of the school year. So that is before you this evening. And then one other item, we're actually ahead of schedule on this, but I'm happy about that. There is an item before you that we approve annually. It is due September 30th to the Ohio Department of Education, but we do not provide career tech ed education to our junior high school students, our 7th and 8th graders. And so for districts who do not do that, we have to pass a resolution stating that we don't. And so that annual resolution is before you this evening in the policy and governance section. And that is all I have in that section for you this evening. That is plenty.
Yeah. Madam President, I make a motion that upon the recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve policy and governance items K2 through K4.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Stoneroff?
Yes.
Ms. Reinschel?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
We need to get back on there. I reckon we just needed
Oh.
No, it went out 12 minutes ago and it came back right on. So that's what you see continuing.
Because our reporter, who's normally here, she sent me a text while I was talking. I felt my phone vibrate, but I didn't pick it up because I was in the middle of talking. I didn't think it would look good to get a text.
Probably not, right?
But that's who was texting me. So.
Yeah.
I'm putting on here, board meeting with pause until reloaded.
Okay.
Until the Wi-Fi is reloaded.
What happened to the governor?
Oh. That's our meeting. Yeah, he had that problem today. Yeah. I was like, what? He froze, right?
Is everybody sending text messages?
Okay.
Okay.
Ready?
Pardon the interruption, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, pardon the interruption. We are back on, yes. We did not proceed with the meeting, so we waited until our Wi-Fi was back up, and we are starting where we left off. So we will move into business.
And Madam President and members of the board, a few business items before you this evening. There is a contract of for agreement there for interpreter services. That is a local person who is willing to provide interpreter services to the district, and we believe that it will result in both better service and a cost savings, so we're happy about that. There is an agreement on the agenda this evening for postage machines. We are updating those in the district. There is an agreement for you, the Mabeca Wireless Broker Agreement for the MiFis. That just allows Mabeca to be the broker for us for those units. The remote learning plan that is to be submitted to the Ohio Department of Education at the end of this week, that is on the agenda for your approval this evening. There was an MOU with the Madison Plains Education Association related to COVID-19 absences, and then the approval of the calendar for the 2020-2021 school year is there for your approval as well.
Madam President, upon recommendation of the superintendent, I ask the board approve business items L2 through L7.
Second. Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Stonerock?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Ms. Roncho?
Yes.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
And Madam President, with regard to personnel, there are a few items there before you as well. We have the approval of some supplemental contracts, most of which have to do with athletics. There are some resignations there before the board as well. Unfortunately, we are sad to see all of those folks leave. And then there is also the employment of an elementary school teacher as well.
Madam President, I make a motion upon the recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve personnel items M2 through M7.
Seconded.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Stonerock?
Yes.
Ms. Reinschel?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
No donations this month?
No, ma'am.
And no new business. So we're moving to executive session. So we do have one this evening. So I make a motion to enter into executive session at 7:52 for the purpose of the following items allowed under the Ohio Revised Code 121.22G, section 1 and 3, to consider the employment and compensation of public employees and conferences with an attorney.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Ms. Reinschel?
Yes.
Mr. Stonerock?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0. Executive session.
No actions will be taken afterwards, after the session. And our next meeting is September 15th at 7 p.m.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Have a nice evening.
Thank you.
Okay, we are coming out of executive session at 9:47.
Yep, 9:45.
According to this.
Yes. Oh, 9:47, okay. Madam President, I make a motion that the board adjourn at 9:48 p.m.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call?
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Ms. Reinchild?
Yes.
Mr. Spendrock?
Yes.
Mrs. Senecas?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.